USA Today, I picked this up on Monday, and as we're talking in here about money, you know when Enron, one of the big companies in Houston, folded, a lot of people were put out of work, and what they experienced is what a lot of people across America are experiencing. Here was one particular fellow, he was 58 at the time. He had in his Enron stock, in his savings, $475,000. Enron stock was selling for $90 a share. The day the company crashed, the next day, stock was 26 cents a share, gone from $90 a share to 26 cents in one day. And now he has $2,800 for his retirement. His wife had back problems. Now she's having to go back to work. He has some real health problems, but now they're going back to work. One fella was making $108,000 a year with Enron. He's 47, earning $108,000 a year when the company went belly up. He found himself with no job and no savings. Now, can you imagine a man making $108,000 a year and no savings? Well, they've had to... Looks like he's about to lose his house. He hadn't been able to get another job. Now let me tell you, a lot across America, a lot of people are having a hard time. He used to spend daily $7 to $10 every day for lunch. And now he says, I'm eating ramen noodles. It costs me 26 cents each day for lunch. And I'm just telling you, one of the things, you're going to face the reality of the world out there. And one of the things you need to do is begin to get an education concerning money. Now, a lot of times we read some things in the scriptures because there's a lot of warnings about money and the danger of loving money. And as a result of that, we think, well, the Bible is against your ever having anything. Now, let me ask you this. If you love Jesus with all your heart, would you rather love Jesus and have $100 in the bank? Or love Jesus and have $10,000 in the bank? Well, I'd rather have $10,000 in the bank. Why? Because money is a resource. You know the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10? He's coming along one day and he sees this guy in tremendous need. He's been beat up, left half dead. And so he puts him on his donkey, takes him to an inn, pays for his keep, tells the guy to take care of him, and said, if I haven't given you enough money to take care of him, the next time I come through, I'll pay you whatever I owe you. He could not have done that if he did not have some money. If you do not have some money, you're going to miss some tremendous opportunities in life to minister to people. Now, let me give you a verse to start with, and this is where most of you are. Luke 6, Psalm 62:10 says, if riches increase. Now, assuming you don't have any now. See, that verse is for poor people. Okay, if riches increase, set not your heart upon them. Now, someday you may have more in life than you have now. Don't set your heart on money. 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 11 talks about, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. So loving money is a bad deal. Jesus says in Matthew 6, 19 through 21, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust corrupts and thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth does not corrupt, thieves do not break through and steal, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So we don't want money to become our focus, but there's a difference between laying up that Jesus was talking about and saving, and it's wise to do some saving. So the Bible talks about five things about money. And we want to start with the first one, and that is about earning. Earning. The Bible is very, very clear about how the primary way we're to get our money. We're to get our money, Genesis 3:19 says, by the sweat of our brow. That's why we're against the lottery, any chance, any way of trying to get money without working for it. We work. And you find verses in Genesis like Genesis 1:28, here's a world God told Adam to subdue it. So really, any time You know, sometimes you find people think, well, you know, somebody's sick. But really, if we just want to believe God, we don't want to use medicine. Let me tell you, God told us to subdue this earth. Anything we learn about medicine, anything, we ought to, and we ought to use it. Because He says, you take this world and you subdue it. Okay? And also, you see phrases like, He put him in the garden to cultivate it, Genesis 2:15. He gave him the job in Genesis 2:19 of naming the animals. And so, man is to earn his bread by work. That's normally how we get our money. Let me make a suggestion. Ken Humphreys, a layman in Oklahoma City, says when you get out and you get a job, the very first day you show up about 5 to 10 minutes before you're supposed to start to work. If you're supposed to start to work at 8, you'd be there around 7:50, 7:55 at 8 o'clock or even before you're working. And you work until about, you're supposed to get off at 5, work about another 5 or 10 minutes. You immediately establish yourself as someone who's not just after a paycheck, but you are working. You know, my dad was a carpenter, and he used to use the phrase, don't chisel on another man's time. And he was a carpenter. And so I worked with him some in the summer, and he said, now, son, these people do not pay us to unload our tools. They are paying us to work from 8 to 5. So we will get to the job early. We will unload our tools, and at 8 o'clock, we're working. And we will work until 5. They don't pay us to gather up our tools. And after 5, we will gather up our tools, and then we will go home. When my dad was 75, he was still picking up his hammer and going to work. When a lot of carpenters in our area could not get work, my dad always had more work than he could ever get to. People would come to him and say, I want you to build this cabinet in my house. He said, man, I've got this job and this job. I can't get to it for 3 months. That's okay. We'll wait. You're the only one we want to do it. When I was a boy, I used to hoe cotton in the summer. We made 60 cents an hour. We could work 10 hours a day. We made $6. We worked 6 days a week, and at the end of the week, I got $36. Now, when the boss worked with me and we were hoeing cotton, we'd get out to the end of the road, we'd get a drink, and sometimes he'd say, let's sit down and rest for just a minute. And we would do that. But when my boss had to go to town to get some parts for the tractor or something, I determined never one time would I ever sit down in the field when he was not with me. I didn't want some farmer driving by and saying, hey, I saw that lazy hand you said had sitting down out in the field. I determined I am going to work, and I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to make him a good hand. Now, one of the things, I don't care what you plan to do in life, you are not going to succeed without hard work. And one of the things you need to learn is to work hard. Now, let me qualify that. I'm not saying work all the time. A lot of men have gotten a job to provide for their families, and then pretty soon they're at work all the time, neglecting the wife and kids. You don't have much over 8-9 hours a day to sell. And that's what you're doing. You're going to this man and say, if you'll give me so much money, I will give you so many hours a week to work. Now, there may be times you're an accountant, like one lady, husband's an accountant. She knows the first 2 weeks of March, before March 15th, she's not going to see much of him, or April 15th. She said he may leave, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. He may get home around 9:30 at night. That may be a couple of weeks. There are times in life, and especially with what's happened in America, a lot of companies, and what began to happen in America, we had these big companies and Boone Pickens, who just gave $40 million to Oklahoma State University for their football stadium. But you know, the way where he made a lot of that money, he made it in oil, but also there were companies. He'd look at this company, and the stock for this company is $20 a share. But they make shirts, they make baby toys, they make dresses. And he says that toy company, the stock of that toy company is worth $10 a share. That dress thing is worth $10 a share, and that women's thing is worth $35 a share. So he buys that company, sells off those different things, and makes a lot of money and puts a lot of people out of work. A lot of people. A lot of companies today that once had 8 employees, today have 5 employees, but they're having to do the work that the eight once did. Now, one of the things you want to learn to do is work and work hard, but you don't want to make work your God. But that's why when you're in school, you need to learn to work and work hard. Now, we know several things about work from the Bible. We need to do honorable work. Let me just promise you this. If I'm without work, you're not going to find me working at some bar, because I don't believe in that. You want to do honorable work, things that produce things, things that help people. Work hard. Do your Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. See? Do it with your might. Work hard at what you do. And then do your work as unto the Lord. Colossians 3:23. It's one lady working in a dress shop. When there weren't customers around, she'd go around and straighten up the racks. She kept things looking neat. One day one of the other employees said to her, why don't you... said, you don't have to work so hard. The boss is not around. And she said, well, I'm working for a different boss. You know, she's working for the Lord. Do your work heartily as unto the Lord. So you try to work hard. We had a call from a lawyer in town. And he said, Max, can you send me another secretary like the last one you sent me? Is one of the girls from the BSU is going through school and working? I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, I just want to tell you this. He said, I'm a young lawyer. He said, I was having a hard time. Times were really hard, me making it just for our family. But I had to have a secretary, so I hired this girl. And so she comes to work for me, and she does the work, and then she says, you got anything else I can do? And he said, well, no, not right now. And she said, well, there's not anybody in the office. Do you mind if I vacuum the office? And he was hiring a janitorial service to come in at night, empty the trash can, dust things, and vacuum. And so she started doing that. She said, oh, sir, in the time I have, when you don't have something to do, I can take care of your office. He said, so she took care of my office. When she didn't have something to do, she tried to find things. She would ask me, is there anything I can do to help you? And he said, I want another one. She graduated and said, I'd like to have another girl like that girl. Now, let me tell you, that guy is a friend of ours till this day. And one of the reasons is because here was a girl who knew that the boss was hiring her to work. Now, there may be some of you who have a job like, here's a guy, he routes trucks, and he just takes calls, so he's sitting there, he has a lot of time. Well, he can review verses. He can memorize verses. There are times that you can do things like that. But be sure that you're giving your boss a good day's work for the wages he pays you. I don't care what job you work on, you ought to be the best worker they have. You may not be the most valuable, you may not know what the president knows or the vice president or whoever, but wherever you work, that will get people's attention when you work. Okay? So work hard. And that's one of the things that you need to learn in life. Learn to work hard. Why do we work? Well, the Bible teaches in 1 Timothy 5:8, if you don't provide for your own family, you're worse than an unbeliever. We work to provide. The normal way we get our money is through work. Now, let me just say this. Don't limit God by just your income. For example, you know, there's some people that came on this conference that didn't have the money. The question is, you look and say, well, it's time to go to Glorietta. Well, I can't go because I don't have the money. Don't come to that conclusion at first. The question is, does God want you to go? And then He can provide the money. Sometimes God will want to bring in money over and above your salary, or bring a blessing. Somebody will give you a refrigerator, or somebody may give you a car or something. Sometimes God will bless over and above. So don't limit God to your salary, but normally that's the way He provides for us. Okay? So we work. We work hard. We work to provide for our family. We work to provide for others in ministry. And in Acts 20, 33 through 35, Paul says, these hands have ministered to my necessities and to those that were with me. He actually worked to help provide for some other people in ministry. We're also to work to provide for the poor, Acts 20, 30 through 35. So there are a number of reasons why we ought to work. We work to help others. But work is important. It's not just a necessary evil. It's ordained of God. And by the way, let me say this to you. If you are going to be a layman, don't ever feel like a second-class citizen in the kingdom of God. Sometimes a missionary comes home. He's given his testimony. He got home. He's going to be here for a year. He needed a car. And so somebody gave him a car. So he gets up. He's given his testimony and said, I needed a car. I prayed, and God gave me a car. Now, let me tell you. God didn't one day crank up a car in heaven and drop it out of heaven. Plop! In the missionary's lap. You know where he got the car? God provided it? Yes. How did God provide it? Here's a layman, and this layman, and this layman, and these three guys get together, and they're a businessman, and says, you know, this missionary's home, he needs a car. Why don't we pool the money and let's buy him this car? Now, you go out and work, and you save money month after month after month because you know you're going to need a car, and you go out and buy your car. Is that less spiritual than the way the missionary got his? Not on your life. You pray, you work, you save, you buy your car. That's every bit as spiritual as a missionary praying and getting it. But that's the one we hear about. See, that missionary couldn't be out on the mission field in the first place if it weren't for laymen who worked and gave so he could be there. Okay? So, God loves laymen. He made a lot of them. Okay? The second area, we've talked about earning. Now let's talk about saving. Proverbs 27:12 says, a wise man foresees the evil and hides himself. A simple, just go on and suffer for it. A wise man knows when he's got 40,000 miles on his tires, he's going to have to buy some new ones. The simple guy just drives them until they're gone, and then he doesn't have the money to buy the tires, so what does he do? Puts them on a credit card, buys on debt, because he didn't have the foresight to see that he's going to need some money in the future. One of the reasons is for saving, you will find sometimes in life the expenses for this particular month, this particular week, this particular day is going to be more than you make that day. It's going to be more than you make that month. So unless you have saved some money, then you're in a bind. Like this one lady said to a friend of mine, you know, we could make it every month if it weren't for those emergencies. He said, what do you mean, emergencies? He said, well, last month it was four new tires. Well, how many miles do they have on? Over 40,000 miles. He said, that wasn't an emergency. Anybody knows you got over 40,000 miles on your tires, you're probably going to have to buy some new ones. So we save in order to meet future needs. We save in order to be able to give. If Sandra and I want to give $500 to the Lottie Moon Christmas offering, we may need to save in order to be able to do that. Saving is not wrong. When you see verses like Jesus say, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, there's a difference between saving money where the focus is on money and saving to meet future needs, which the Bible says is wise. You don't lay up treasures for your own selfish needs where your focus is on the money. We lay up money, and there's a difference between laying up and saving. You save to meet future needs. And always in your saving, it's always in the hands of God. If God tells you to give it away, you can always do it. But you save in order to meet some future needs. Like the Good Samaritan. He couldn't, if he hadn't had some savings, he couldn't have helped the man that day. Now, let me just mention this. Always live on less than what you make. Now, I know you're at a stage in life, many of you, where you don't have much of an income. Maybe no income. But get in the habit of always trying to live on less than your income. Now, you know what happens in America? When most people's income goes up, their lifestyle follows it. See, the day comes in which, as your income goes up, your lifestyle does not need to follow it. For example, You don't need, girls, you don't need 100 pairs of shoes. You just don't need them. Well, maybe you got 30 pairs of shoes. And you're making $45,000 a year. And now suddenly something happened. What if you're making $500,000 a year? You don't need 100 pairs of shoes. See, if all of a sudden I had $10 million, I would not eat very many $15 steaks. I wouldn't. Maybe occasionally. You don't need that much steaks anyway, first place. But I just wouldn't do it. The day comes in which as your income goes up, your lifestyle should not follow it. But that's exactly what happens in America. And fact is, in America, not only does it follow it, but 80% of the people in America owe more than they own. Which means not only does their lifestyle follow their income, their lifestyle exceeds their income. That causes debt. So, savings. You want to learn to save. Save for future needs. Now, let me show you something here. I want to show you what happens to poor people in America. Here's what happens to poor people. And by the way, a lot of people have bad attitudes towards the rich. They think they're just gouging people. You know, some of the most selfish people in the world a lot of times is not the rich, it's the poor. You know why? This poor person, who does he provide housing for? Only himself, his family. But a rich man that owns an apartment house, how many people does he provide housing for? Not only his family, but maybe 75 other families. Do you know that one out of every three people live in rented housing in America? Do you know that if the private industry does not provide that housing, one-third of the people in America would be living in the streets? And if they didn't do it, the government would have to. One man said, anytime I think I need more money, he said, you know what I think? How can I serve more people? The people that make the most money are the people that serve the most people. Poor people do not build factories. It's the people who have enough money to provide their living expense, and then they have surplus, they build the factory and put people to work. So watch out for that. Now, I know there's some rich people, and especially some entertainers and people like that, that they just use their money. They own a house in Aspen and one in, you know, on the beach in California and all that. I'm not talking about that. But a lot of times you'll find in America people that have a real bad attitude towards the people that have money. Think, well, they just ought to give it all away. Well, not necessarily. But here's what happens to poor people. He has a job that produces income. And then he has expenses. Money comes in through his job. He makes income and it goes right out of his expenses. It goes out for such things as food, rent, clothes, entertainment, debt retirement, credit cards, all that kind of stuff. And what does he have left? Almost nothing. Okay? So he gets his job, he has expenses. I mean income, and it goes out as expenses. Now let me show you what happens to the middle class. Here's what happens with the middle class. He has a job. He has income. He has expenses. Oh, but the middle class a lot of time is smarter than the poor. So what do? We have something else. We have liabilities. So this guy buys him a boat. And now it's a liability. Now if you list your assets, you'd put that on there. What do you own? Boat. But you know the only one it's an asset to? The bank. Because that's where you're making payments on your boat. Oh, You also have to have tags on your boat, so you pay money for that. You also have to have gas for your boat, so that is a liability. So the middle class in America, they have income. A lot of it goes out as expenses, maybe for rent, house payments, food, clothing, education, entertainment, debt, retirement. But oh, now we've found another way. We have liabilities. What doesn't go out as expenses a lot of time goes out as liabilities. Now let me tell you, a liability, the simplest definition, is anything that takes money out of your pocket. A house, it may be good to own a house, but a house is a liability. Because every month you get a house payment, you got utilities, you got insurance. I'm not saying you shouldn't own a house, I think you should. Most people, at some point in life. But don't call it an asset. It's an asset maybe when you sell it, but month after month it takes money out of your pocket. Now let me show you what happens with the rich. Here's what happens with people. And when I'm saying rich, I'm talking about people that have money in excess of what it basically takes them to live, that they can do other things with. This guy may have a job. He may not. But he may manage his properties or something. But he has income. He has expenses. I don't care who you are in life, you never get away from expenses. But also, he has learned something. He has assets. He may have some liabilities, but if he has liabilities, they're very, very small compared to his assets. So look what happens to this man. He may have some money coming in, and he's got some going out as expenses, certainly. But also, he has income because he's got a rent house. He has some stock. He has some money in the savings. And the difference between the rich and everybody else in America is they've learned something. They have assets. Assets is anything that puts money into your pocket. And it can do it while you're asleep. I mean, you got $2,000 in a savings account while you're asleep tonight. Or maybe you went out playing golf that day or whatever. But that day you had money going into your account from interest from that. One of the things I would highly recommend that you begin to do in life is you need to begin to save some money. And you need to begin to think about assets. You can work hard all your life for money, or you can begin to have some money working hard for you. Okay? Does that make sense? Now, we've basically been talking about saving. We're talking about, I've gotten into a little bit of an area of investing, but we talked about savings. You need to begin to save in order to do something. Like one day I'm backing out of my car, backing the car out of the garage. And I get out in the street and it won't go in reverse, won't go forward. And I think, uh-oh, the transmission just went. No problem. Just go in, call one of the staff meeting, get a ride to work, call the garage, come fix it. Well, $700. No problem. Because I just plan on, you drive a used car, sometimes it's going to happen. But a new car, I'd be spending $235 every month. And so sometimes you'll have, so I just know things like that are going to happen, so you just have some savings so the transmission goes out. Not a bit. I mean, I didn't worry one second about that day. Now, so you need to begin to have some savings. Let me talk to you about spending. One of the first things you need to learn to do in life is resist advertising. Proverbs 14:15 says, a simple man believes every word. And you know, the way companies make money is they sell you their products. You know, fact is, some of you may be even majoring in advertising. The world tries to make you discontent with what you have. You know, that car you have is really, I mean, it's really not good. By the way, you know the most expensive perfume in America? It's the smell of a new car. And the clothes you have, they're not, it's not the latest fad. The shoes you have, they're just not up to date. Advertising constantly tries to make you dissatisfied with what you have. And not only that, but you owe it to yourself. I mean, you really deserve it. See, I don't care what it is, you deserve it, see. And they're constantly trying to get us to buy. And now in America, there's no way God can say no. You know, God can't even tell you no. You pray about buying something and you don't have the money. Well, God used to could say no. I don't want you to have that. So what do? You just live without. Well, what do you do now? Put it on a credit card. Go in debt. Now, God may have said no, but you didn't get the message, so you go in debt. Now, be careful about your spending. Learn all of your life to be saving and to be wise about spending. You want to look for value, quality. Buy things that will last. It doesn't have to be the top of the line, but you can buy a bunch of junk that's pretty worthless. You know, I know some people, and you have to really watch out for credit cards. Some people cannot handle them. I think credit cards, I have a credit card. My wife has a credit card. We put everything on credit card. We get air mileage. I mean, we won't go on vacation to go to Maine. We fly to Maine, doesn't cost anything. Why? Because we have a credit card that you get mileage for. And then this way, if we buy something, my wife needs some hose, I need to buy something, we write one check at the end of the month and 1 37-cent stamp, and we don't have to mail a bill to Dillard's, one here and one there, but we use it for convenience. We pay off the total balance every month. Now, credit card people hate us. They want you to pay the minimum. So you just keep paying, keep paying, keep paying. If you can't have credit cards, you know one of the things to do if you have a problem in impulse buying and you're going to mall, leave your checkbook, leave your money, leave your credit card home. Go out to the mall and have a blast. You see something, you think you need it, and go home and pray about it a couple of days. And then if you have peace about it, you go back and buy it. See, if you can't handle it, that's one of the best things to do. Be careful about debt. Because you know what you do when you go in debt? You're borrowing against a future income which you may or may not have. Now let me say this. Some of you are in school and the only way you can go to school is to borrow some money. I think if there's anything legitimate to borrow money for, it's for education. Now, that doesn't mean go borrow all the money you can. I would work in the summer, work hard. You get off a month for Christmas, what do you do? A lot of college students lay around. Go out to the mall, go find some place to work, work hard in the summer. Try not to borrow money even for education. But if that's the only way you can do it, because that should be increasing your future income. But I know people that have gotten out of school, they've been out 10 years, they're still paying on college debt. Be careful. You cannot believe how hard it is to pay off debt. Because what you have to do is you still have to have the same living expenses and the things like that, but then you've got to be filling in this hole that you've created. So watch debt. Now, I'll say later when we talk about investing, there's good debt and bad debt. Bad debt is what most people have. Cars, furniture, vacations, credit cards, clothes, that kind of stuff. I think there's some good debt. Most of the rich people that I know have some debt. I know a man that's $1 million in debt, but he's probably worth about $12 million. He can sell all of his assets and still have $11 million left probably any day of the week. A lot of people that are in businesses, there are times that they do borrow money. And there's such things as good debt. I think for years I made payments on my house. That is good debt. There's some good debt, okay? But be careful. You're not at the stage in life where there's any for you. Now, let me say this about spending. Learn to be wise in spending. Like my wife. Sunday, we get the Oklahoma City paper. She sits there. Maybe she's watching TV or something. And she clips coupons. Now, you know who spends the most money on coupons in America? Who use coupons the most? Most people think it's poor. It's people that make over either $50,000 or $70,000 a year. I mean, I've got records at home. My wife would go to the store And here the bill is $78. Well, we paid $58 because of the coupon. I remember one time I was coming out of Safeway with a cart full of these big liter Cokes. We paid 9 cents apiece for them. And we've got them for our team. See? Because they had triple coupons, they had a sale. She waited, they had triple coupon, we made 9 cents apiece for them. Last week, before we came here, Wright's had a big sale on tomatoes, these real special, whatever, anyway. 99 cents a pound. Well, over at Walmart, at the grocery store, they had them for $2.39 a pound. But they have a policy, they'll match anybody's prices. So before she goes to the grocery store, she makes a list of things we need, and over at Wright's, they got this price over there, they got that price. So when she goes through the counter, she says, here's, y'all match any price, here's the price they are at Wright's. So she pays 99 cents for the $2.39 tomatoes. The lady right in front of her pays $2.39 if she got them, see. I mean, my wife has saved us thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in the time we've been married because she's wise. Now, another thing you know about grocery store, and girls and guys, one of the things you need to do now is start getting an education about finance. I'm going to tell you about a book in a few minutes. One of our students is in seminary now. He got a finance degree from OU. He said, I read this one book, and I promise you I learned more from that one book than I did as a result of getting a finance degree from OU. I'll tell you the name of the book later. Now, one of the things you want to learn to do right now is to begin to get a financial education. Most people are so ignorant in America. They may have PhDs. They may be making $300,000 a year, but people are so ignorant concerning money. If somebody comes to the door selling something, don't buy what somebody is selling, ever. Now, I have bought some little Girl Scout cookies because of relationships with the family next door. I didn't buy them for value. I bought them for relationship. But if a guy's selling a vacuum cleaner, I want to shop and see what's the best deal of a vacuum cleaner, not just buying it because a salesman shows up. So learn sales resistance. Learn to buy value and learn to be wise when it comes to spending. Do you know the three biggest problems in America people have with money? Number one is a consumptive lifestyle. Consumptive lifestyle. Consuming. Buying stuff. The other big problem is they don't have a budget. You know what a budget is? Simply telling your money where you want it to go rather than asking where it went. You sit down and you think, I want this much money to go here. I want to give this much. And that can be very, very helpful. A lot of people, they get the end of the month and they say, where did my money go? Well, you sit down when you're not looking at this thing that you want out at the mall. You sit down when there's no pressure on and say, well, we can spend this much on clothes, we can spend this much on that, or whatever. And you tell your money where you want it to go, rather than asking, where did our money go? And the other big thing is cars. Okay? Let me talk to you about cars for a minute. Because a lot of you are going to spend a lot of money during your lifetime on cars. Now, I'm going to give you a copy of this, because if not, you'll think I'm lying to you. Let's suppose, and by the way, with a baby at home without a car. Bob Anderson said there's been more tears in our family over one car than any one single issue. Now, one time in Norman, we needed a car, and I'm going to tell you another story before I get to what I was going to tell you. One time we needed a car. We had a baby. And we needed a second car. We had $400 to our name. So I started looking for a $400 car. I did. Found this guy, and he likes to fix up cars, so he had a 47 Plymouth. He had painted it, man, it's the neatest looking car. But he said, now don't ever drive it over 45, because you can't even buy parts for it. And if you do, the motor won't stand it. And I looked between the BSU and the church and the grocery store, in the mall, and the places where we go, and there wasn't any place where the speed limit was over 45. And so I bought it. I drove it for several months. One day I'm going to work, and it dies. So I just get my briefcase, walk on work, call the junkyard, come pick it up. You can have it. Meantime, we'd save money for a car. But let me show you what most Americans do. You get out of school, let's say when you're 25, and you go buy a new car. And you buy a new car every 4 years between the 40 years of your work life. You buy a new car every 4 years. You'll buy 10 new cars during your lifetime if you just had one car. See, you understand what I'm saying? Buy a car, new car, drive it for 4 years, trade it in on a new car, get you another one. Over a 40-year period, trading cars every 4 years, you would buy 10 new cars. Now, at a rate of $256 a month, car payments, that was when this particular thing was figured out. The car payment was $256, something like that a month. At the time, the interest rate was 12.5%. It's 265.80. Excuse me, 265.80. In this particular example, a person buys a new car, and his payments for the next 4 years are $265.80. You trade new cars every 4 years. During your lifetime, you would have paid $127,584 in car payments. Now, that was at 12.5%. I know that's higher than it is now, but the principle is the same. That car dealer takes that money you give him each month. He turns around and reinvests it for the exact same interest rate you paid him. He doesn't have to get one penny more or 1% more money. It's exactly the interest rate you gave. You know what he will make off of you? He will make $3,641,550 off of you. To drive a new car every 4 years, over 40 years, will not cost you $127,000. It'll cost you $3.6 million. If you had paid yourself $256.58.84 a month for 40 years, you'd have $3.6 million. Now, let me just say this to you. I've never bought a new car in my life, never planned to. You know the most expensive perfume in America is the smell of a new car, right? That's it. You don't need a new car to get you where you're going. You know, the car sitting out here in the parking lot is as good a car as on this grounds. I paid $11,000 for it, $34,000 new. The guy wanted $12,000 for it. Buick Park Avenue's got every kind of button you can imagine on it. Leather seats, reclining seats, you name it, it's got it. Terrific gas mileage. I talked to a man in those cars. He said the best engine ever made in America is in that car. Those cars drive 250,000 miles each. See, in America, the car you think's worn out, ship it to Cuba. Go down there and look sometime. Go to Australia. Go to New Zealand. Ford, Chevrolet's all over the place with 250,000 miles on them. But you got rid of it because you thought it was worn out. Now, so I needed another car. And so I thought, one day I looked in the paper, I thought I wanted another Park Avenue. And I see an advertisement that says high mileage. And I tell my wife, I just laugh. I said, nobody will even look at that car. It's got 118,000 miles on it. So I go see the guy. He wants $6,900 for it. So I offer him $5,000. He said, well, I will still owe $5,200, but I'll take what I owe on it. So I gave him $5,200, 118,000 miles on it. But their highway mileage, I have it checked over. If you want to drive to California today, get in that car. I mean, I think it'll make it. And then if you want to turn around and drive to New York, just turn around. $34,000 car new. I get it for $5,200. We're so afraid of mileage and things. If you take care of a car, you don't, and you can have a nice car, a nice looking car. A nice car. I got a better car than people got that paid $29,000 for theirs car new. One day, I need a car. So I call this kid, been in Bible study. His dad owns a Chevrolet house in Oklahoma City. I go up there and I'm visiting the used car lot guy, and he said, as long as I live, I'll never buy another new car. He said, you won't believe some of the cars we get in here. Here's this lady. Her husband's an oil man. And they trade new cars every 2 years. Now, he's dead, but the widow has got it in mind. Trade cars every 2 years. Half mile to the church. 3/4 mile to the grocery store. Puts it in the garage. She brings it in. 2 years later, it's got 7,000 miles on it. He said, you wouldn't believe some of the cars. I mean, guys, wherever you leave once you go here, just see the number of cars you see. I mean, they have what they call in Norman the mile of cars. You know why? Because there's a mile of cars. Lots everywhere. You can buy a fabulous car. And since when Sandra and I married, she had a car payment. It took 2 or 3 months. We have never made a car payment in our life. I never planned to. Buy used cars. You don't need a Spitfire 8. You need transportation. There's a difference. You can have very good cars. Learn to buy. You need furniture. You're going to have kids. They're going to beat on it anyway. They're going to walk up and chew on the edge of the coffee table. You don't need a brand new furniture. Fine. I mean, you come to our home, the dining room table, the 6 chairs, the buffet we paid $65 for. It looks as nice as people who paid $600 for it because we got it in a garage sale. You can do things like that. And then you can upgrade. You can buy a chest or something. It's not the greatest in the world, but it meets your need now. And then one day, you see something, and here's somebody moving, and man, they bought it 3 months ago, but they don't need it. And I mean, it's unbelievable what you can buy stuff for. Learn to buy wisely. Now, there's times that you can buy things, buy clothes on sale, buy out of season. I remember one time the people live across the street from us. We got to talking to them. They made twice what we made, and we had a higher standard of living. We had a better house. We had better cars. We had better things, and we made half of what they made. Let me say this to you. I want to back up just a second. We're talking about, well, let's go to the next one. investing. Investing. Learn to invest. Let me show you a little thing about something happened a few years ago in America that are just fabulous. Fact is, when Candy Rex was leaving, she said, thanks for sharing this with me. She said, I've done this, and I think even going to seminary, I'll be able to do it. She said, there's a thing that happened in America a few years ago called a Roth IRA. Now, we've had an IRA where you could put $2,000, and let's suppose you made $40,000 a year. You pay income tax on $38,000. It's tax-free, and you set it aside. The only problem with that is you invest that in stock or put it in the bank, and then when you take it out at retirement, let's suppose that $2,000 you put in is now made $10,000. Well, you got to pay tax on it when you take it out. But then they came up with a Roth IRA, and if you made $40,000 and you took $2,000 of it and set aside for your retirement, invested it, you still had to pay tax on that $2,000. In other words, you paid tax on the $40,000, so you paid tax on it. But you know, you let it grow, and when you pull it out, you'll never pay a penny tax on it. So if a $2,000, had you, now let me just ask you this. I know you're not math majors, a lot of you. But had you rather pay tax on $2,000 up front or $10,000 later? I'd rather pay $2,000 up front. Well, now they've upped it to $3,000 a year. Now here's what happened. A young guy, and I'll give you a copy of this, but this young fella starts when he's 21. He puts $2,000 in a Roth, I mean, not a Roth, it was just a regular IRA. $2,000 a year. He started when he was 21. He put in $2,000. He did that until he was 28. $2,000 a year, every year until he's 28. When he was 28, he quit. He thought, I got my retirement taken care of. Now, at the time that this was figured, and I clipped this out of the Norman transcript a number of years ago, and at the time, the interest rates were 12%. They're much lower now. But remember, whatever the interest rate, the principal is still the same. Like a while ago, I told you, at 12.5%, the guy made $3 million on you. We'll say it's 6%. Okay, he only makes $1.8 million on you. I mean, big deal, huh? Now, the other guy waits until he's 28 to start. He puts in $2,000 every year until he's 65. This guy never put in over $14,000 in his whole life. This guy put in $75,000 or something like that. About $75,000. $76,000, something like that. When they retire at 65, you know who has the most money? The guy that put in $14,000 has $1.6 million. This guy has $1.3 million. You know what the thing is? The number one thing you've got going for you is age. It's only an asset if you use it. You're young. If you can get money at 10%, if you can get in recent years, now we've had a bad year the last couple of years in stock, but don't worry about it. If the world stands, it'll probably come back. 10%, at 10%, your money will double every 7 years. So if you can put $1,000 in the bank now, 7 years from now, you're going to have $2,000. In another 7 years, you're going to have $4,000. In another 7 years, you're going to have $8,000 if you never put another penny in. So look here. This guy is through at 28. This guy waits until 28 to start. And the article said that the great thing is that young people have something going for them. It's age, but they usually do not learn the facts of the money game until they're in their 30s or 40s. Okay? So learn to save. Learn to invest. Investing in order to be able to do something later. I've told people this and I really believe it. I think it would be easy as falling off a log for a businessman in Norman, Oklahoma to be a millionaire in 15 years. Easy. I mean, not even take a lot of work. Because we live in a college town and where it's very easy to rent things. Now, I'm 66. And because I raised my sport number of years, I put in $33 a month in savings. So if I had to live, if I lived very long and had to live off of what I'd saved, it would not be very much. Because our salary's never been very high. So I thought, you know, I don't want something that takes my time. But I was looking for a rent house for a girl on our staff. And a number of years ago, this girl named Carolyn Teague, and we were trying to help her get a house. So we were looking. We found a neat little house. But due to the situation, she didn't want it. And so Jessica was looking for a house. And so I'd looked at two or three she'd asked to look at. And one day, Sandra was driving around. We'd watched in our area because it's a very good area. And noticed the same little house was for sale. Well, Jessica was out of town. I couldn't get in touch with her. I just knew she'd probably want the little house. I knew it wouldn't last through the weekend. The lady was asking $85,000 for it. I offered her $82,500. I said, we'll take the house. If she doesn't want it, I'll buy it. I'd been reading, trying to learn some things. So, as it turned out, she didn't want the house. She couldn't handle it. And so, we bought it. Well, one day we closed on that house at 1:30. We signed the papers. At 3 o'clock, there's a guy standing there offering me $900 a month for it for the next year. Well, by the time I made my payment on it, I got a 20-year note on it. The time I made my payment on the house, my taxes, my insurance,
I still get $328 a month off that house, over and above my expenses.
Now, yeah, but what if air conditioner goes out? Well, I fix it. I buy another one. So that month I didn't. But you know what? I put somebody else in that house and I'm letting him buy it for me. Well, I may not be alive 20 years from now. If I do, I'd be 88, 86. But you know, my wife doesn't need it. We can always give it away. I wouldn't mind a BSU having another $900 a month coming in. So I look around, I think about that. So we save some more money. One day another house comes up. Somebody's moving out of it. I don't buy houses that somebody else has lived in and messed up or rent houses. I find this other neat little house. I see it in the paper and the guy wants $107,000 for it. I don't look at it, I wait. But I watch the paper and it's very easy to do because any new house is right at the bottom. In the Norman, Oklahoma, I can do that in 2 minutes or less a day. I notice the same house is now up for $97,000. I think, well, I think I'll take a look at it. I go over and look at it, and the guy said, well, I have a new house built. They got it ready a whole lot earlier. I've lowered this thing $10,000. I'm going to price it down, and I just need to get out of here. I said, good, I'll buy it. Well, we don't make but $200-something a month off of it, but I got a 15-year note on it. I mean, all a guy would have to do is buy 10 rent houses, get them paid for. 15 years, you got $1 million worth, and you'd probably have $10,000 a month coming in. I know two of our students have already done that. One guy bought a house, had some guys live with him. Didn't cost him a penny to live in the house. Now he got it paid for, so he bought another house. He's got $1,100 a month coming from that. So he saves, and he's going to buy another house. That's what he does. Now, I'm not saying you ought to do that everywhere. I don't intend to get... You know that some of those houses probably taken me less than 10 hours since I've owned them. I don't want something that eats up my time. All I want is a check once a month. That's all I want. And you know, not only that, but you can write the agreement. And see, what I'm trying to tell you is get an education. Read. So I read. Here's a guy written a book. He manages real estate. So I read his book. And he says, you know, I don't want that guy, if a potty stops up on Christmas Day, I don't want him calling me. So I say to him, okay, this house I rent for $1,000 a month. But I tell you what, if I get my check by the first of every month, I'm going to knock off $25. So if I've got my check first of every month, then it's you get a $25 discount. Not only that, but if you take care of all minor repairs, if a potty stops up, you call a plumber. You pay for it. I'll knock off another $25 a month. So you get $950, but they don't bother you with details. And that's what I want. I want somebody bothering me. I'm being a shoe director. I don't plan to give time to that. All I want is a check once a month. I want you to buy the house for me. Now, see, I'm just saying, that's something a little guy can do. And that's what this student's doing. He's been out of school 2 years. He's already got two houses. I know another one graduated last year. He already owns three. Now, I'm just saying, learn about assets. Learn to do something over a period of time that makes money for you. And this one guy said, you know, I think in 15 years from now, I can do whatever I want to do in ministry. If I want to go to Africa for 3 months, I can go. Because I'll have income that I'm not having to work every day for. Asset, things that put money in your pocket. Now, don't get carried away with that, but I'm just saying it may be for you that you invest in stock, or it may be that you put some money here. And some people say, oh, but stock lost money. Yeah, if I lost some money in stock, you bet I have. Because my money was in my retirement fund with our convention, was in stock. Has it gone down? You bet. Has it gone down a bunch? You bet. You know, I've never lost a minute's sleep over it. What am I going to do? Leave it there? It'll come back, probably. So you need to learn some things about investing. Now, the Bible says five things about money. It talks about earning. We talked about that. It talks about spending. We need to be wise, and that's why People, you need to entrust every dollar you get as a gift from God. That's why try to be very wise about what you spend. It is a gift from God. It's a resource. I remember when I was in college, most of the men smoked. One of the first sermons I ever preached in my life, I came back from college. Cigarettes at that time were 25 cents a pack. I could buy a New Testament for 25 cents. And here were guys that smoked a pack a day. I was measuring cotton acreage in the summer when I was going to college. And so here were guys that were buying a pack, spending 25 cents a day on a pack of cigarettes. I bought New Testaments for 25 cents. And as I worked during the day, I witnessed to people and gave them a New Testament. A lot of times you look at something and you say, that's one of the reason people get trapped in the lottery. Do you know that one out of four people in America, you know what their plan for retirement is? Surveys have shown one out of four win the lottery. You've got an 8 times better chance of being killed by a dog, literally, than winning the lottery. And a lot of people think, well, I don't have anything anyway. Well, I'll just take a chance on this $5. No, that $5 is a gift from God. You need to think about that. You walk by a Coke machine. Do you need that? Or would it be better? Because let me tell you, you walk by a Coke machine. And let's say that thing cost you a dollar. No, no, no. It didn't cost you a dollar. You put that in and you set it aside. You leave it for 40 years, that coat costs you $10. We don't think in terms of that. We are very consumptive lifestyle. Starbucks coffee was built off of you guys and your mentality. You don't want coffee, you want an experience. Let me promise you, 75 years ago, Starbucks could not have come into existence. Because when people bought coffee, they wanted the best coffee for the cheapest price. Starbucks, they don't even attempt it. You want that experience. Experience. Starbucks cup. Now, the other thing the Bible teaches is about giving. And I'm not saying anything. Let me just mention some quick things, because if you've gone to church, you've heard about this area. You may not have heard much about earning, about spending, about saving or investing, but you've heard about giving. You ought to give proportionally according to the way God bless you. That is what the New Testament teaches. It is not the tithe. Okay? Some people ought to be giving 50% of their income to the Lord, and they could. You know, I read of this baseball player getting a 30-year contract for 5 years. Okay, he pays more in taxes. What is the maximum tax in America today? Is it 45%, isn't it? 50%? 50? Right at it? Okay. So the poor guy, for 5 years, he gets this $30 million contract for 5 years. And so he only has $15 million left. I mean, I think he could make it. And then we go to church and we preach the tithe. That guy ought to be given 70-80%. R.G. Letourneau, who built a lot of the earth-moving equipment, he invented the electric wheel. By the time he died, he was living on 10% of his income and giving 90% away. Some of you, God will pour millions of dollars in your hands, through your hands during your lifetime. He will. And if you use it wisely, you can give to be a tremendous blessing. I'm not saying you never have fun, you never go skiing, you don't take vacation. 1 Timothy 6:17 says God's given us all things richly to enjoy. You can still have a lot of fun, but it's wrong to go skiing every week. I don't care how many millions you make. Right? Be good to go skiing some, once, twice a year, great. But to go to Hawaii for vacation this year and to Aspen the next week and all that, I don't care how much you make. That's a waste. And money is a resource which you can use for the kingdom of God. There are two things here that you can pick up on the way out. And thanks for coming. Rich man, poor man. Rich dad, poor dad. Secular book. The guy talks about getting rich. Don't let that upset you. Just learn the principle. He's learned some, written a number of other books. But if you'll get his first one, in the back it lists other. But a fabulous book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You'll learn more about money than you've learned your whole life. I don't know. It's some Kikugawa or some kind of... They'll just go to Barden's. Any secular is number one bestseller in New York for many, many... Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And pick up one of each of these on the way out.